Welcome back to the Reverent Living Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Sims. In this episode, I sit down with Dave and Tracy Sims from Image Bearers Ministry and talk about their experience from being Christian counselors for over the last 30 years. Tracy focuses on the nursing side of counseling, whereas Dave has a more emphasis on spiritual development. My hope is that this episode is as enriching for you in your spiritual walk as it was for me to do the interview. On that note, let's go ahead and jump in.
Sounds dread.
This week, I am blessed to have Dave and Tracy Sims, or as I'd like to call them, Mom and Dad. So first I'll just hand it over to you guys so you can introduce yourself and kind of explain the reasoning why I decided to have you on as counselors with Image Bearers Ministry. Over to you guys.
Thanks. You go first, sweetheart.
So my name is Tracy, and I am a registered nurse since 1981, and I worked in neuro, and then I worked in school health, and then I was very interested working with young children in the school system who were diagnosed with different psychiatric disorders. So when we moved here to Atlanta, Dave will share more about his training. He was very involved in Christian ministry and lay ministry, as well as Christian counseling. And so I became involved and started going to some training to learn more. And one of the things that I found when I went to the training was that we began to do co-counseling. And one of the things that I noticed is a lot of the people coming in were already taking medications. And so I was very interested in following up on that, because in the 1980s, when I went to school, we didn't have a lot of the psychiatric medications at that time. And it's been since I was out of school, and I realized I needed more training. So I went back to school to obtain my master's in psychiatric nursing to look at ways that I could maybe combine the study that I'd learned with Christian counseling as well as with medical. So that's kind of my background. And I went on to do a doctorate looking at emotional health as my dissertation with emotional intelligence. So I'm very interested in continuing to learn and that learning what's involved in Christian counseling, but also looking at someone holistically.
Yeah, and I'm Dave, and I've been doing pastoral counseling since 1996. My training has been in discipleship counseling and spiritual direction. So that's something that probably needs some explanation. You may want to ask me questions about that, Ben, later to clarify. But discipleship counseling, in my mind, or at least the way it was explained to me when I began training into it, was understanding humanity from the Bible's perspective. God had made himself available to us through his Holy Spirit to live within us and to make us whole. And so the Bible attempts to communicate to us how we live out this wholeness. And so we viewed discipleship counseling as learning to cooperate with that life of Christ that is so powerfully at work within us. And then later on, as I said, I did some schooling in spiritual direction. And what I discovered along the way is that discipleship counseling was a perfectly good title for what we were doing. But discipleship means something different in the minds of most people. And so it's almost like you always have to clarify your terms. One of the things that I've heard as a way of maybe distinguishing between those two disciplines, that is discipleship and spiritual direction, is that because most Christians tend to think about discipleship as something that's a part of the early part of the Christian life, we tend to not think about discipleship for those people who've been Christians for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And yet the discipleship process never stops in the life of any Christian. Spiritual direction is something that many of the ancient traditions recognized as valuable and important, and it tended to give more focused energy to people in the more mature stages of life. So whether those are accurate distinctions or important or not, the Christian spirituality is kind of the essence of where I give my energy. And I try to use whatever language is helpful for the people that I talk to. Soul care is another way of describing it, a more generic way that I think probably is less common, but also maybe more self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so you said a few things that I do want to kind of tease out a little bit. First, I kind of just want to go back to what Mom said in talking about a lot of the people she saw coming in, and I think this is what in the early 90s is what you were saying, were medicated. It's
2000s, because I went through the lay witness or the lay counseling in 2001. And that's when I wanted to say this. One of the things that I really noticed is when Dave started kind of going through some counseling training, I noticed a big difference in him. And that kind of made me think about that, because I knew he had been a Christian a long time, and I was interested in some of the things that he was learning in that training. But it wasn't until 2001 that we moved here that I got to go through that training. And it was that training that looked at an approach that was very different than I had ever heard before, looking at how a person develops in their body, their soul, you know, and then their identity. And that was new language for me. And I had not been familiar distinguishing those three aspects. And so it was during that training in 2001, it went for a year. And then we did co-counseling for the next year. And so it was 2002 that's when I saw people in that co-counseling that I began to see them coming in. And they were coming for Christian counseling, but many of them were already taking psychiatric medications. And that's when I realized that I needed to go back for nursing and do more training as a clinical nurse specialist in psych. So that was the time period about that.
Yeah. So here we are 22 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And so the church I grew up in, Grace. It's a non-denominational, but really I think the church culture from the early 2000s up until this time, I don't think really talked a lot about medication, mm-hmm. talk about how do we think through our mind and body when it comes to what we're putting in. Mm-hmm. And so as you said, in 2002, you started noticing this. From your experience over the last 20 plus years, what have you guys seen in increase or decrease of your patients that you are working with on a day-to-day basis being more medicated, or have you seen there kind of been a resurgence, kind of this mentality that you were kind of talking about earlier, Dad, of like a soul ministry where we're divesting ourselves from the need for medication and really trying to depend on the Spirit or the Word or the community that the church provides to help bring that healing. So over to you.
Yeah, well, I do want to share this part that's been kind of a change for me. When we first moved and did the training, we were involved in a nonprofit counseling ministry. And we were involved in that until what, 2008?
Seven.
And it was during that time that a couple of us talked about maybe going and getting further training. And when I finished my master's in psychiatric nursing, when I went back to work, my whole goal was to work in this particular ministry. But when I went back, they reminded me that that was a lay ministry and they were doing training for lay ministers or pastoral. And my training had a license with it. And so one of the concerns was I needed to be careful that I stayed in the training of the lay ministry versus the training of my license. And so as we began to talk about that, it made sense to us to open our own nonprofit in 2007 so that we could certainly use the training we had done, but add the medical. So as you said, that was something I was most interested in because of seeing people that were taking medications. We were able to do a seminar at our church talking about people that were taking medications. And so I began to think a lot about that. You know, when do medications come into it? When is it important for safety? And I look at it as a safety. And so what I usually share with people is that when there are issues with thoughts to hurt themselves or thoughts to hurt someone else, they're having difficulty sleeping, they're having difficulty functioning. That is, to me, a line that we might consider considering medications at that point. So as far as how many people and changes, I'm not sure I have the stats on that, Dave. Do you, that thinking about how many people we see, I would say at least the 3/4 of the people I see are taking medications. Sometimes, though, those are short term, particularly when I see people with anxiety disorders. It's when they come to a counseling center, we're looking at more what the root is, what has caused that concern. And so sometimes medications aren't needed as we continue to move throughout the counseling process. But I look at medications for people with anxiety disorders, sometimes depression. That could be related to an incident, a death, that they maybe are going through grieving, that would be more of a short term. Those, the people I see suffering in those categories, we can work on counseling interventions to look at the root. But if someone's diagnosed with, let's say, bipolar or schizophrenia or what we would consider chronic psychiatric disorders, those people typically will be on medications the rest of their life. So we would approach it differently based on what the diagnosis is. So sometimes I do get people who come in that tell me they've been diagnosed with a particular psychiatric disorder. And so one of the things I try to work with them on is what were the symptoms that caused them to be dysfunctional, that caused them to be disruptive and not being able to live life in a functioning way. So what I'm looking for is, does this person have the ability to think clearly? And that's the concern I see many times people coming in, even with anxiety disorders. If they're not able to think clearly, they're going to have difficulty in a counseling situation. So that's where I see medications being something that just could be a short term, then we can work on getting down to that root and in a more spiritual way and combining those two together. So I see that as a strength, that medications can be something that could help someone think clearly, be able to get their sleep, but then help them move on to do more the root, which we believe at Image Bearers has much more to do spiritually. We certainly do see people that are have chronic psychiatric disorders, and trying to get them in a recovery phase is really what the goal is that they could continue to function in a healthy way, even with a chronic medical disorder. So it's hard for me to think about statistics over the years. I'm not thinking there's more. I wouldn't say there are more than I saw in 2007, except with anxiety. I will say that the shift I have seen in the the 2020s has been anxiety disorders. Those have escalated. I'm not seeing as many people suffering with major depressive disorder, bipolar, that I used to see in 2008 through the teens. I think that has been a major change for me that I've noticed in the last 2 years, particularly after the pandemic, is that more people are suffering with anxiety disorders.
Yeah, I wanted to really quickly just circle back to a couple terms that you guys are using, just so that it's clear to those that are seeking counseling, and you've talked about a Christian ministry, you've talked about lay ministry, you've talked about spiritual direction ministry. So could we, and then you talked about when you started in about 2008, needing to have the right licensing to deal with medical needs of patients. So if I was a patient and I'm looking for a Christian counselor, what are the things based off those three kind of different types of ministries that you kind of outlined? To me, as a customer, what are those things mean, and what am I getting if I go to someone that's a lay ministry trained versus someone that has licensing behind their instruction?
Yeah, most people who contact us for help often are seeking us out based on somebody else's recommendation. You know, it's clear that Tracy is a nurse. We have another licensed counselor. We have other pastoral counselors. And so when people seek us out, it's either because they've had some prior connection to somebody we've worked with in the past. And I don't know that they're necessarily getting into the specifics of training. Most people are just looking for help, and they heard from somebody else that they received help. But again, we make clear to people who we are, the person, the staff member we're assigning them to, what their training is, and then each licensed counselor versus each pastoral counselor works within their own discipline to establish a goal of which we want to try to reach within the context of our conversations.
You know, one of the things, I coordinate a psych NP program at a college where we're looking at people who graduate from our program can go work as a psych nurse practitioner in an outpatient clinic where they prescribe and do med management. They could open their own psychiatric counseling office and work underneath a psychiatrist and do counseling. But one of the things that we encourage them to do ethically is to be clear on the website, be clear in their paperwork that when clients come in to do their consents, what type of counseling is it? And that's something we talk about on the first time they come in, and what type of counseling are they looking for? What type of counseling do we offer? And I remember one day talking about this with a psychiatric nurse, advanced practice nurse. She was a clinical nurse specialist as well. And she said to me, when I explained to her what we did at Image Bearers, she said, well, that sounds like cognitive behavioral therapy. And I smiled to myself because I thought, yeah, my approach is very much like cognitive behavioral therapy in that we're looking at false beliefs. We're looking at how people developed, what was their story, what kinds of things happened to them, what types of relationships. So when I approach that, I look at how someone grew up and what messages did they hear? What were the false beliefs they, but one of the biggest differences I would say, and Dave can address on our website and our approach, but one of the biggest differences I see that I would not call myself a cognitive behavioral therapist, because that particular approach looks at false beliefs. It looks at inaccurate beliefs is what they call it. But what they will do is focus on cognitive interventions to say, think on these things. These are the thoughts that you need to think on and to change with cognition, that they could do it. You could do it within yourself. I can think differently. I can approach this a very different way. But one of the things we are trying to do, and I try to make this very clear on the very first day I meet with someone, is clarifying why they're coming in for counseling. What is it you're looking for? What is your goal? And sometimes people just want to come in and get a quick fix. They just want to fix this one thing they think. And if they could just fix that, then everything would be okay. And one of the things I share with them is that my goal is to walk with them to hear God, to walk with them to see what God is saying to them. And to have, many of them are external processors. They want to talk about it. They want to just say it out loud. And just through hearing their stories and talking about the way they grew up and their belief systems, trying to help them see what that means as a child of God. What does that mean that they have this false belief, which we would call flesh? So a lot of what I've emphasized is the flesh living versus the spirit living. And how do you identify that? What is my flesh pattern? And I believe that when people are empowered to understand themselves and understand their flesh system and how it pertains to them, then they can become more aware how to walk in the spirit. So the difference for me is I'm not trying to empower them in their flesh. I'm trying to walk with them to see what the Holy Spirit can do inside their lives, what God can do. And I don't see quick fixes. This is a lifetime of continuing to grow, as Dave shared about that discipleship living. But I see it as some layers that maybe we could identify some root issues. We can identify some things that maybe have tripped them up for a long time that triggers them, that makes them triggers emotions in them where they feel inadequate or they feel less than. So we talk a lot about emotions. We talk a lot about these false beliefs, but it is where we go next that's very different. And that is going into what it means to walk as a believer, what it means to walk in the spirit, and empowering that we are totally dependent on God in this walk. And for some, that's very foreign and they've not heard that language and they haven't heard what it means to walk in the spirit and to walk, continuing to learn and to grow. And that it's not just this one-time thing. It is a journey. And it is, in fact, one of the books I use says it's victorious living. It's living in freedom from the bondage of sin, but walking more in awareness of what God can do in our lives. So there's where I guess I approach it that way on the first time I meet with someone. How would you say it's on our website that we are trying to say what our approach?
That we're a Christ-centered approach, that Christ is our strength. He's our hope. He's our wisdom. When we learn to live in relationship with him such that his strength, his wisdom is coming to us, then this is not, I'm working to get better. It's I'm working to live out the reality of this new creation that he's created me to be.
Yeah. So you guys are talking in some language that I've seen started popping up around COVID. That's this idea of deconstruction. Now I know inside the church, deconstruction seems to be more of a negative because it's I'm deconstructing to walk away. But what it sounds like from what you're saying is with the help of someone more mature, as well as someone that is coming at it with a means of spiritually, but also the understanding of how to counsel in some form, physically train, walking through that deconstruction of those false beliefs, and then being able to outwardly process with another person how you would sub in the new idea of what one Christ did on the cross and how that freedom allows you to live moving forward. Is that kind of a brief summation of how you see it, or would you say it's a little different?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I would say the one thing that I would add to what you're saying is it's not just a matter of understanding what the scripture has to say that's true about me and the world and God and the people that I live with. It's understanding how I have sought out a particular way of living that sort of anchors my life, if you will, apart from God. And so if we want to use the term deconstruction, we don't use that term. But if we think about it in a deconstruction context, I mean, that fits because what we're doing is we're learning to lay aside old ways of depending on something other than God. And we're laying hold of new ideas, which include finding God to be the strength, the hope, the resource that I need for living life.
Yeah, I don't think I've used that word either, but I can see in the context of what you just said, Ben, that makes sense. I guess I've looked at it more as the importance of having, to me, for counseling, it's the importance of having a safe environment, a place to just express. And what I find with external processors is sometimes they say things and they're not necessarily saying things they really believe. They're just processing. And it's extremely frustrating for them to talk to maybe their family members or talk to even people at church at times because they feel misunderstood. And they feel like they're just trying to understand something and they're expressing it. But as they process through it, then they're able to hear what they're saying, and we can maybe help them just direct them in certain ways, ask more questions, clarify things. And to me, that's when God truly is encouraging to them. And we spend a lot of time in prayer in our sessions to be able to stop and just settle. One of the big things that we're seeing with people today is the ability to settle themselves and to really be able to hear God. Their minds are going so quick and they're frustrated and they're anxious and to be able to come into a room that's, we hope, is safe. So we're not trying to be the church. We're not trying to be their pastors, we're trying to give an environment where they can come and share and have someone pray with them. I kind of get teased at school because one of my students said, well, you think everybody needs counseling. And I said, I think it's a privilege. Yes, I think it's a wonderful thing. Now, does it have to be formal counseling? Does it have to be somewhere you have to go? No. But I do feel like in the local churches that many times we can come alongside to give them a place that they can work on and then be able to go right back into that community and maybe be a little more healthy in relating. So a lot of this, what we're talking about is being able to communicate in clear ways, be able to express, to be angry, but sin not, to grieve, to have an opportunity to really work on some things that growing up, there's some hurts. And we certainly see a lot of trauma today. And that's one of the things we've noticed in the last 10 years is the understanding of how much trauma has affected people and how a pill, medication, may not even touch that. But it's intense counseling and going deeper and building that trust. So, yeah, I think it's, to me, it's such a great opportunity to work with people that are hurting and to know that it's not on us to fix them. It's not on us to make it better. We're just walking with them to let God do the work that he says he began in us and will perfect it.
Yeah, and to maybe try to bring some clarity to some of this language we're using, Ben, at the core of our belief system is the idea that what is wrong with humanity is the brokenness of relationship that we've incurred with God and human beings. And our belief is that in repairing those relationships, then we can begin to live out this wholeness that we talked about earlier. The gospel makes available a reconciliation to God. And so I would say at the core of what we do more than anything else is help people connect with God mm-hmm. in a relational way, in an interactive way. And it's in that interaction that they find healing and wholeness and strength and energy. That might be oversimplifying it a little bit, just to add a little more specificity to it. You know, Tracy used the term flesh earlier. What we mean when we use that word is that these are ways, again, that I have learned in life how to depend on something other than God to sort of anchor my life, give me hope or strength, settling, make me feel better about myself. I mean, it could be any number of things. Again, at the core of our belief system is that God supplies us relationally all those things that would satisfy the soul and strengthen the soul and make the soul healthy. And so the biggest challenge of all that is for ourselves as well as the people we're working with is how do we break those dependencies on things in this life and learn to depend on God for that which He has promised and already supplied us, because Christ in us is the supply of all those resources. It's the changing of habits that's challenging. And I would say 90% of our work is in helping people change their habits.
Yeah, that's a great point. Recently listened to John Mark Comer teaching, talking about the habits that we live out day to day bring us closer to the thing that is at its core. And so if the core of that thing is something to do with money, then that's bringing me maybe more and more rich, but maybe dead inside. But if it's a daily habit of implementing different spiritual practices centered on God or Christ, that it's bringing me closer to becoming that person or the spiritual word of sanctification over that period of time. On that note, what would you say when you have people come in, are the main habits that you've noticed that are either entrapped or have caused this idea of I have to be the one in control to fix the problem? What are those things that you're seeing that have got people fixed in their way? And what is maybe a really easy step or just a recommendation if people listening are there that they could potentially desensitizing themselves to that habit?
Yeah, well, I would say that every human is looking for peace and joy and hope and meaning. If we just took those four things, peace, joy, hope, and meaning, the culture that we live in, the United States of America, regardless of which coast you live on, the middle part, doesn't matter. It's all the same in the sense that we're all living under a lot of pressure. The culture itself that we live in, even though there are many, many positive things about it, we live under a lot of pressure. And I think that's the reason we're seeing this increase in anxiety that Tracy talked about earlier. And people seeking out treatment for anxiety is that the culture is just bending, in some cases even breaking, under the pressure that is being put forth. But again, it's because we live in a culture where we're bombarded with millions of messages as to how to gain peace, how to gain joy, how to gain hope, and how to gain meaning. And again, you can go to any culture in the world, and you know, every culture in the world answers those questions differently. And then the Bible answers that question very uniquely. Again, it probably falls into one of those four big categories. The people that we're seeing are zeroing in on help me find peace, or help me find joy, or help me find meaning, or help me find hope. We listen to their stories and try to ascertain where are you currently, what strategy are you seeking to try to give it to you? And then we invite them to help us understand what their belief system is relative to God and their relationship with Him, and to what extent is it possible that you might be able to depend on Him more fully for these things? He says He promises Himself to you in ways that will support you. Most people don't push back against that. Some people will say, you know, that sounds really hard and difficult, and I'm not sure I can pull that off. I might just keep trying what I've been trying and see if I can make that work better. And of course it's not possible, but, we all have to exhaust our own resources before we tend to seek God. And He usually is the last resource.
Which I think that's what I'm seeing happen in the pandemic, is that many of us lived in this false, security, thinking we could solve things. And I think the pandemic really showed a lot of people how little control we really have. And it's the word control that I notice a lot that comes up with people, is when they don't feel in control, their anxiety goes up. They feel anxious and want to learn skills to feel in control. And so our message is, that's the very message that God is inviting them to come to, is to trust in Him. And that's a scary thought, when they want to be in control, and we all do, right? We all want control to feel better. So I notice for myself, when my anxiety goes up, I feel anxious, it's usually about some type of control. that I'm feeling out of control in an area of my life that I want to feel better in, and I want to learn some skill to feel better. And so that's one of the areas I find that we've been working on a lot with people, is just looking at their emotions and where they feel that anxiety. And it seems to point to those areas that they are holding on control, that to actually say, Father, what is it you're doing in my life?
Yeah. So on that note, peace, joy, hope, and meaning are the four kind of things that you highlighted there. I would say for me, when I truly started diving into the Genesis story, and the Bible Project, I think, has a very phenomenal way of kind of explaining this, but also depicting, and depending on the way that you learn. But thinking about where sin came from, when we use the word sin, I think you used it as flesh. But the initial sin of humanity, Adam and Eve, came from not the serpent, not the devil, or whomever you want to label that term for. It didn't come from that entity. It came from the disobedience of wanting to be in control or be like God, and eating from the tree of knowledge in good. And so on that note, as I've processed through that, or deconstruct, or as I've tried to cognitively reshape the beliefs, the difference in translations of different Bibles, had to kind of retweak the lens at which maybe I've heard something in church and understood it kind of poorly or wrongly, it skewed the amount of peace, joy, and hope, meaning that I had from that text. And so on that note, what does being a Christian mean to us having peace, joy, hope, and meaning? And how is that different than what our culture is currently, the culture you grew up in, the culture that my children are going to be growing up in, are going to tell them?
Yeah, well, I almost hesitate to use those terms, peace, joy, hope, and meaning, because most people, when they hear those, will think in terms of, you know, I get a peaceful, easy feeling. That's an old song by the Eagles back in my day. We're really not talking about feelings, although you can certainly, a peaceful feeling is certainly something that every person can feel, and you know, it's a pleasant thing. But what I'm talking about is a condition of soul. In other words, Paul and Silas are chained up in a Philippian jail for acts that were not in unjust, and they're singing praises to God. They possessed a condition of soul in such that their souls were at peace, and they had joy in spite of horrific circumstances. And that's something that God alone supplies. And again, it's not something that comes to us like an electric shock. It's something that comes to us over a period of time. Learning new, leaving off old habits, taking on new habits, habits that connect me with God, such that He's producing in me this new condition of soul. But I think it's also important to point out that, again, that that this is not just cognitive understanding. The understanding of the Bible is critical. We need to understand it and understand it accurately. But that's just getting to first base. That might even be just getting to home plate and getting up to bat. What the critical issue is how are my desires connected to things other than God? That's what fuels, it's my emotions that fuel erroneous thoughts or thoughts that are not true, thoughts that make promises to me that they can't deliver on. Eve saw the fruit and it was appealing to her. She saw that it was appealing and she desired it. It's at the desiring level that our souls are built, and they're built on shifting sand, as Jesus used that term. And he has come to enable us to build it on a rock. But again, it's at the core, it's the learning to live from the desires that Christ himself brought with him when he joined his life to mine.
Yeah, I appreciate that. As we kind of wrap this up, I just wanted to highlight, well, one, you've said it a couple times, but Image Bearers Ministries is the name of your ministry. And if I listened to this and I wanted to get connected with you or mom, how could I do that? Where do I find you? What do you offer for that specific ministry? Is it a virtual or does it have to be something like in person?
You can find us at imagebearers.com. We do offer virtual counseling. That is, some of us offer virtual counseling. Now, that may or may not be something that Tracy can do, but I can. Yeah.
Perfect. And then you guys are based out of Fayette County or Fayetteville, Georgia. So if you are in person and are looking for Christian counseling and you're in the Georgia area, Southeast Atlanta, that's kind of where you would find them.
Yeah. Southwest Atlanta. Yeah.
So on that note, I like asking kind of just to close things up, either what's a useful book or something habit wise that in the sense of a spiritual habit that's been useful in your current season or past season of life that you would just want to share with the audience as something that they can add to their life to add fullness as they walk in this second life of walking with Christ.
You have any thoughts about that?
Well, I think the thing that I've been thinking a lot about lately is just paying attention to my feelings. Just paying attention to when I'm hurt or I'm disappointed or confused. I think I'm just asking the question now, particularly if something frustrates me or I get angry, just stopping right then and asking God, what is it? What was that? What is he trying to speak to me? And for me, that's been a very helpful time for me to just stop and pray and ask and wait to hear what he's revealing to me about something. As Paul talks about, we either, walk in the flesh or we walk in the spirit. And I'm interested in that. I'm interested in paying attention when I am walking in the flesh, because Paul says it's not helpful, that it's only empowering when we walk in the spirit. So I'm finding that emotions help me to trigger in on when I could be walking in the flesh and walking in my own power is really what I think about. Without God, I'm walking in my own strength. And I want not to be wood, hay, and stubble. I want it to be honoring and glorifying God. So I find that emotions are just maybe a window into my soul on what's going on. And could I just be willing, courageous to address that and to ask God what he's doing? And so that's been a very freeing thing for me, is to be honest about my emotions and willing to address it.
Yeah, it's an interesting question you're asking, Ben, about books that are helpful, only because in my view, the Christian life is experienced in numerous phases, levels of maturity, if you will. And it's like there are well-written books that address us at different stages of life. It seems as though the people that we most see are people who have tried to make their faith work, and for whatever reason, it's not working. And that's where we oftentimes find people. Is it's like, you know, my faith has worked my whole life, and now for whatever reason, it's not. Help me understand what's going on here. And there's a number of authors that have are helpful, I think, when you get to that stage in life. I think one of the simplest one of the persons that writes most simply and clearly is John Ortberg. And you know, so anything that you get from John Ortberg will be challenging in the sense that it's very substantive, but he writes again in such a clear way that it's not difficult to read. He takes some difficult subject matter, which is the counterintuitive nature of the Christian life. It's counterintuitive and it's countercultural. And, you know, anybody who writes in a way that indicates that they've got everything figured out just means that they haven't got to that place where life is not working for them yet. And they probably will. And when you do, you need somebody like Ortberg, for example, that can help you make sense of it. The Me I've All That I Want to Be is one of his older books that I think is really helpful in that regard. I forgot the name of it. Well, I'd have to look it up. Anyhow.
By John Ortberg?
Yeah. Mm. One of his best. Let me just look it up real quick. You can edit this out, can't you?
I can, but I won't. Yeah. So, for those that are listening, either a helpful tip would be just observance of our emotions, and using that as a window to either a place where God can work or God is working. And then it, regardless of kind of where you're potentially your stage of maturity and faith, John Ortberg seems to have written some stuff that has been influential for you as you've walked through different stages, is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Soul Keeping is the name of the book. I'd say that'd be a good place to start, Soul Keeping.
Well, once again, Mom and Dad, thanks for taking the time. And I close with just a sense of prayer. And so we'll do that same here. So, Father, just thank you for this time to just talk about who you are, as well as offering instruction from those that want to live your way out faithfully. We ask that this has been encouraging or is something that can be of use to those that are listening. We just ask that we can continue to be your light into this world and that we can continue to help shape those to live a life striving to be more like your Son. And as we pray, amen. Mom and Dad, thanks for being guests.
You're welcome.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Reverent Living Podcast. If you enjoy what we're doing here and the content that we're providing, I ask that you would like and subscribe to the channel on whatever platform you're listening to. I'd also ask that if you could continue to spread the word of what we're doing here, either through your social media platform or by word of mouth, we would greatly appreciate it. If you have questions or want to connect, please reach out at ben@reverentliving.com. Until next time, I pray that God's Spirit will be upon you and bless all your actions. Thanks for joining us. God bless.